And a very good morning to you. This is the Wednesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. 4341790, 266-4862, 266-IVOB, or you can reach us at brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. Michelle Braffett is the technical operator producer. I'm Dennis Johnson, your host. We go until 2 this afternoon with our usual breaks for the regional roundup, tracking the latest. The 12:30 edition of the latest. We also have ICAB 5 minutes, all on our way to 2. It was 1963 and was a year that was a period that was noted for racial unrest, civil rights demonstrations. There was outrage in the United States sparked by media coverage of police actions in Birmingham, Alabama. Dogs, fire hoses, protesters in their early teens, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. led a march of some 250,000 people, it's the average, to the Lincoln Memorial in Washington and delivered his iconic I Have a Dream speech. The stated demands, the passage of meaningful civil rights legislation, the elimination of racial segregation in public schools, protection for demonstrators against police brutality, a major public works program to provide jobs, the passage of a law prohibiting racial discrimination in public and private hiring, minimum wage, self-government for the District of Columbia, and the then President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, backed the Civil Rights Act, which had been stalled in Congress for a prolonged period. Fast forward to 2020. The cry is Black Lives Matter. Police brutality again at the core of the march. And while none of the protests in the United States may have individually reached that of that march on the 28th of August 1963, there have been marches around the globe and indeed here in Barbados in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. This morning, for the first half an hour or so of Down to Brass Tacks, it's my pleasure to welcome to the airwaves of Voice of Barbados the United States Ambassador to Barbados, the Eastern Caribbean, and the OECS, Her Excellency Linda Schwartz Tagliatella. Good morning, Madam Ambassador.
Good morning. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. And it's a pleasure to have you with us this morning.
It is truly an honor to be here. I'm happy to be able to share and converse with people in Barbados this morning.
Black Lives Matter and the subject of racial discrimination in the United States. I started with a reference to the 1960s. After all the marches and the promises and the various changes in the United States over the years, including affirmative action and the first black president, why are we still at a stage where minorities, blacks in particular, feel that they are somehow not treated as equal citizens of the United States?
You know, I have to say that the United States is a democracy. And unfortunately, regardless of how many laws and how our Constitution was written and everything else that the government has done to put in place affirmative action and programs to help people, we're not perfect. We have made strides. We have a long ways to go. One of it is just educating one another about life and about discrimination and about racism in particular. But I think it's a matter of putting into practice the things that we have put into legislation. And it's something that we have continuously worked on. I think we have come a long way. There is still a long ways to go. The unfortunate death of George Floyd obviously made everybody much more aware at this moment. There was a public outcry. People wanted to be heard. And I think the fact that this is a democracy, that we allow for freedom of speech, we allow for freedom of assembly of people, it gives us the opportunity to reflect on what has transpired and what needs again to be done. How do we move forward? How do we bring people together? How do we accept the blame for what has happened, but also how do we accept that we need to come up with programs that need to be done? I can't tell you that there have been a lot of changes. I can tell you that when you talk about discrimination, obviously our focus is on racism, but there continues to be discrimination in other categories of people. There's still some discrimination against women. There's certainly discrimination against gays and lesbians. It's a matter of, number one, setting out and educating people. And the second thing is then figuring out how do you train people, how do you work with people, and how do you have consequences for people who do not follow what is appropriate norms in our society.
But you have a situation, Ambassador, where the incident that led to the loss of life of George Floyd is not the only one. You have Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky. You have another black person dying at the hands of a white police officer. You also have the response of the police union, saying that the blame lies on the political leadership. You have a situation where correctional officers have filed racial discrimination charges because they were not allowed close contact with the officer who was kneeling on George Floyd's neck. The prevalence of harsh action by police officers on persons of color. We can go back to the Stand Your Ground incident earlier with another black youth. Removing that charge of racial inequality and the strong arm tactics of police officers in particular is something that will rile up large sections of your population and undermine any political action or any legislative action if the persons responsible for enforcing the law seem to be enforcing it in an unfair manner?
First, I would say that we're talking about a minority of police officers. I hate to, you know, be categorically saying that all police officers are one way or the other. I think we're talking about an accepted group of people. I think that, yes, George Floyd's death was truly tragic, and I certainly grieve for his family, his community. I am very sad that George Foreman had to die to raise the issue of racial discrimination as a public national issue. I wish we had approached it in a different way, obviously. But to say that police officers in general all are discriminatory is not true. There are a number of good police officers out there who aren't that way. But I have to say, yes, you're absolutely right that we need to, again, train people better, get them to think differently, and understand that just because of your color does not make you good, bad, or whatever. It talks about how do you deal with the arrest of an individual or the questioning of an individual? And it should not be based on color. It should be based on the situation at hand. This is something that obviously has to be worked on. But I would say the majority of police officers in the United States were appalled by what happened with George Floyd. And I assure you that our system worked. The people who were involved in the death of George Floyd have been arrested. They have been charged. Mm-hmm. One gentleman was charged with second-degree murder. The others were charged with other crimes. But we are taking action, and that is part of our democratic process. And anyone who had been involved in the deaths of Breonna Taylor, George Floyd,
Rashad Ahmed, Brooks,
LaShawn, all have been appropriately arrested and charged according to their crimes. So there is a way where our system works. It's getting, I feel bad that we have to use our system and that this is happening. I think what we need to do, again, is go back, and it's a matter of educating people and, again, making sure that when they do not follow the rules, the regulations, that, in fact, they are appropriately disciplined, whether it's being fired, whether in the case of a serious crime, whether they're being prosecuted for the crime they've committed. It's a process by which our country has to move through.
Do you support the Black Lives Matter movement?
Yes, I do. Very strongly.
How do you think it will affect the current elections in the United States, both at state level and at the national level, as you head into elections in November?
I think what's happening in the United States will have an impact. I think people will look to the people running for office, see how they are addressing the issue, see what their solutions or plans are for helping to alleviate racial discrimination. I think it will give people platforms in which to express their views and to get potential lawmakers to either buy in or not buy in. So I think that it does matter. I think what people say will matter. I think the protests, as long as they remain peaceful, will have an impact on people running for office.
You have a situation in the United States where the DACA, the Dreamers Act, is to be ended. There's been an executive order restricting certain classes of visas, and then, of course, the deportations to the Caribbean in some of the countries that you represent. Is America saying they don't want immigrants or only want a certain type of immigrant? Because you had yesterday in the Barbados Parliament Dr. Sonia Brown talking about the embassy in Barbados and not refunding persons for their visas. And Trinidad and Tobago this morning, newspaper reporting concerns about Trinidadians, about the restrictions on visas. Should persons in the Caribbean, I know Trinidad is out of your jurisdiction, but in the countries under your jurisdiction, Barbados, the OECS, should we be concerned about that level of administrative action in the U.S. to immigrants?
First of all, there is a policy that we are not issuing any visas, and this relates to COVID. It relates to the fact that, number one, we are very worried about, I mean, given the cases within the United States, obviously we're very concerned about people coming into the United States who may be infected and or people coming into any of our embassies or consulates, and how do we, in fact, set up our operation to protect our employees. So there has been a suspension of visa activity across the globe. It is not just in the Caribbean, it's across the globe. There also has been a proclamation by the president where he talks about limiting the number of special visas that we give out, which are primarily work visas. And again, it goes back to letting people into the United States, but more importantly, the fact that unemployment is very high, and that there will be a very limited number of work permits. But here in Barbados and in most of the Caribbean, very few visa categories are affected by this proclamation. So I think it's more an issue that we are not issuing any visas at this particular time worldwide, as opposed to we've selected certain countries or places that we're not going to do it. Individuals who already have visas are allowed to travel to the United States. We have not revoked any of those visas. And for the moment, we've just taken a respite as we go through the COVID pandemic. Obviously, in Washington, we continue to review this. At some point in time, obviously, we will go back to issuing visas.
You've said on more than one occasion, education will be the key to this. There are still pockets of resistance to the message of equality for all races and the brotherhood of man. Of course, you can't legislate people's emotions and people's hearts. And with the pandemic and the loss of jobs in the United States, is this going to make the education process a little more difficult? Because if you have uneducated or undereducated persons who believe that their loss of jobs, their loss of income is because of immigrants who can be paid a lesser rate, educated persons of another color who are taking away their opportunities. Isn't it going to make that education process a little more difficult in these times?
I would assume and I hope that as businesses reopen in the United States and factories and even the federal government, that they will continue along with their affirmative action plans of hiring people, looking for the best and most highly qualified person for the job. Some of the jobs that we would assume would go to people who don't have advanced degrees, such as working in some of the fast food places, that will, people will look for jobs, obviously, because they need money. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, in some cases, people who are highly educated will not be hired for certain jobs because the employer knows that once the job market opens up, that person will be gone and they're not going to put in the time. So I'm not sure that people are going to pick and choose based on educational basis. Mm-hmm. They're going to pick again on the person they think is best qualified for the job. You're not going to get a person who has a PhD to go work as a sales clerk in one of the stores, for example. Right. So I think that it's going to, right now, yes, there is very high unemployment. We're looking for ways to reopen the United States businesses. We're looking for ways to get people back employed. I think job opportunities will be out there for everyone. It's a matter of looking in the right places.
What are some of the opportunities you see for Barbados and the Eastern Caribbean in this new environment in the U.S. post-COVID? Because in the past, we've seen persons who've gone there for furthering their education. Some have entered the military and served. Others have gone because they have relatives there and hope over a period of time to be made citizens of the U.S. Are those opportunities still there?
There are always opportunities. There's always an opportunity for people to work. Obviously, it's finding a job that matches what your expectations are. But as best I can tell, we have always allowed people to immigrate to the United States because the jobs exceed the number of people that we have in the United States. So I think that when things, as businesses open up and we go back to what used to be normal, and I'm not sure there ever will be a normal again, what normal was, it won't be again, mm-hmm. but there will be job opportunities. Again, it goes back to, you know, with students who will go to college, they can stay in the United States for 2 years after they graduate with a special visa to work. There will be job opportunities for them, people who join the military and become, or people who have the opportunity to become American citizens. There will be job opportunities out there. And it's a matter of knowing what your qualifications are, how best you can look for and apply the skills you have to a job.
Mm-hmm. In the United States, the concern has been the transshipment of drugs across the Caribbean, and there's been collaboration between the nations of the Caribbean and the U.S. in that regard. In Barbados, in addition to the scourge of drugs or concern, it's the flow of weapons, some from the United States. Can you, without getting into perhaps anything that may be top secret, let me put it that way, the collaboration between the United States and the nations of the Caribbean with the transshipment of drugs and illegal weapons? Is it where you're comfortable with it, or is there more that you think we can do, or the U.S. can do?
I have to say, and I will, you know, give a shout-out to the 7 countries that I'm accredited to. Mm-hmm. They have been the best partners in drug trafficking, interdiction, and working on reducing drugs going into the Caribbean islands as well as across the islands to the United States. We've had incredible partnerships and collaborations with the military and police forces of all the islands. I think that the bigger issue is just capacity. And we have worked on building capacity. We have actually given interdiction, are given boats that are capable of interdiction to each of the islands. We have established very close working relationships. We have sort of a network of people who work throughout the islands so that they collaborate on where to look for certain drug boats and whatever, and it has been highly successful. The regional security system has been an integral part of this, and it's been a huge effort. I think where the downfall comes, again, is capacity. Obviously, when you're talking about islands and you're talking about lots of water, there are lots of ways that drug boats can move from Latin America across the Caribbean into the United States. Yeah. And because of the capacity, obviously, we can't catch everyone. But we've been very successful, highly successful in the efforts we've had with the other islands, and we're very appreciative of what they've been able to do.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Oh, I was going to say on the issue of guns, obviously, if we interdict boats, we look for both guns, drugs, any other things that might be illicitly being trafficked. Guns is an issue. Obviously, yes, there are guns coming from the United States, but again, we are working very much with customs in each of the countries. We're also working with the United States Customs, and hopefully we're going to increase our capacity to look at how they scan packages coming into the United States so that we can actually identify where the guns are coming from and for ways to stop the movement of guns coming into the Caribbean.
Well, I know you said you would perhaps engage some members of the public if they would like to ask you a few questions, and I'd be happy to have them engage with you if that is still possible. I know you have limited time with us, and hopefully a couple of our callers would engage with you. On the line, we have the United States Ambassador to Barbados, the Eastern Caribbean, and the OECS. Good morning to you. Hello?
Good morning, Dennis.
Hi, good morning, Glenn.
Yes, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you. And you?
I'm good. I understand you tried very hard. This isn't my central topic, but I thought I have to respond to it, given that I'm on the line. The U.S. ambassador, obviously, I know you tried to elicit certain meaningful information out of the ambassador, but you did not succeed. And I understand that because she is there representing the United States government, so she has to protect the interests and the image of the United States government. She also she's a political appointee, and therefore whatever she has to say has to fall in line with the president's point of view and position. So she has no personal opinion publicly. But what question I'd like to ask is, I have been reading where the United States government has deemed that any country, and this has to do with something involving Barbados and Cuba, where any country that has engaged the services of Cuban doctors and other medical personnel in the fight against COVID will be deemed to have contributed to the trafficking in human beings, as determined, as categorized by the United States. They think that the doctors, the conditions under which the Cuban governments allow the governments, the personnel to come to assist us in a time of their need, constitute human trafficking, quote unquote, because they have determined it, and that therefore any country that takes advantage of the generous offer of Cuba is contributing to that quote unquote offense as deemed by the United States. I think that's the height of arrogance, and I would like to see how the United States could deem what another country, another sovereign country does. Other sovereign countries, Cuba as the initiator, and Barbados or any of the others in Eastern Caribbean as recipients, as contributing to what they deem an offense against that. So I'd like to have the U.S. ambassador, she can kindly give some points of view on that. Hello?
Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am.
I am aware of the legislation that was introduced by the Senate. I do not know or could not comment on what the future of that legislation will be or how the United States Congress will act to it. But what I can tell you is that Cuban health workers are subject to restricted movement, confiscated passports, non-payment of wages, and threats to deter the thought of escape. We have interviewed across the globe former Cuban doctors, and they have confirmed that the Cuban government typically pockets between 75% and 90% of their salaries paid by the host government. My understanding is the host government pays the government of Cuba, who then in turn pays the doctor.
But
I don't know the details details specifically of what's going on in Barbados with the Cuban doctors, you would have to ask the Ministry of Health here in Barbados. But let me say, first let me say, the United States truly applauds the Cuban people who bring healing to others, especially now during the pandemic. The issue we have is that we decry the system that robs them of their freedom and their labor's earning. I understand that there's limited capacity in the Caribbean islands in particular, because that's where I'm accredited. I understand that doctors and nurses are needed because of that capacity. But I also believe that these people are being...
Ma'am, if I may,
yes?
how does that come to be the responsibility and the business of the United States government? The government, the only thing is more important for the United States, for example, to implement a decent minimum wage level in the United States than to worry about other countries, a country which is historically, which since 1959, you made every attempt. The United States succeeding, to stifle, to stamp out, to overthrow, and they are resisting it. I also have to remember that in COVID-1976, there was a plane bombed Sabah off Barbados, a terrorist act which the United States has been proven to be very active in preventing the perpetrators involving the Cubans again from coming to justice. Those are the more important things than the Cubans, which have historically contributed to the liberation of countries in Africa, has controlled doctors in Italy. Why didn't you go after Italy in that respect? Why did you have to come after the OECS as again in the same very same issue? I just think it's a typical example of the United States being arrogant, insensitive, and to quote the old traditional term, being ugly Americans. And I think that they are out of line, and they have to fall in line. Otherwise, that is why the world is joined in this condemnation of the United States. Countries with different cultures, political systems have joined in this traditional, historic, psychic discrimination against Black Americans, other Americans, and minorities all across, as happened across the world. They've joined in the condemnation of the United States about it.
No, I truly apologize, and I feel bad about the way you view America. I, on the other hand, look at it differently. The United States is a democracy. It is run by rule of law. It stands for human rights. That's why we're defending the Cuban doctors. We feel that they are not being treated appropriately. We have stood behind many other countries and stood behind people where they have not been treated right, whether it's through dictatorships or through abuse by others. I think the thing is we are consistently and constantly working with countries to help improve them, not only help improve civil society and life, but also to work with governments to build democracies. And if you talk about where we are now today and where we want to go, the United States is a partner to the islands in the Caribbean. The United States has always been and always will be a partner to the Caribbean countries. And yes, we want to work with the Caribbean nations to build their economies, to give freedoms to their people, to work with them on becoming prosperous. And I think that what has transpired in the past, I can't fix. I can't make it better. All I can say is that as far as the Cuban doctors go, we are concerned about them as human beings, as people who are out to earn a living and having their freedom to move about and do as necessary.
Ma'am, if I might, just one last point, and I let someone else talk to you. I haven't been in the government of Barbados as a cabinet minister. I have had exposure where you were talking about interdiction of drugs, assistance rendered to the Eastern Caribbean, etc. I had some familiarity with that, some acquaintance with that. I was involved in some of that. But I remember very well where I was very baffled by a circumstance where the United States was had agreed to provide with a boat, a vessel to help interdict these drugs and guns and whatnot. All right? But at the same time, they were fighting it they found it impossible to provide that same vessel with, I say, about $110,000 a year to maintain and put fuel in those vessels to make sure we can carry out the very same exercises that, you know, a lot of these drugs are going to satisfy the demand in the United States. You talk about the supply, you also have the demand in the United States. So I found it was baffling. Countries that you're depending on to assist you in that fight, so-called fight, that they found $110 US dollars a year to be too much to help to keep those vessels on sea to carry the very same thing. Misplaced priorities, and I will never understand how the United States gets it right. But thanks for engaging me, ma'am.
Thank you as well, Glenn. Madam Ambassador, you made the statement about the U.S. being a democracy on two or three occasions. How do you reconcile this with some of the accusations of what is being called voter suppression in the United States? Less polling stations open, concerns being raised about voting by mail.
The United States is a democracy, and I will say that again and again and again. We are not a perfect democracy. We work towards being a perfect democracy. When we identify things that need to be fixed, we take action. We listen to the American people, who are the people that our government represents and takes care of. And it's through legislation and through good governance that we, in fact, work towards the things we need to do. If you're talking about, I know there's questions about how the United States is going to vote in November. There's great concerns about whether, in fact, people should go to the poll or whether we should do mail votes. Mm-hmm. The idea is being able to identify who are registered voters and where they live. I know I'm a registered voter in Virginia, and I have to file a request to get a mail ballot, an absentee ballot every year, so they know where I am and what my address is. So I think there's some concern about how do you actually, the process of doing it, not whether it's legal or not. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what confuses people. So I think as time goes on and people are making decisions, they're going to have to look at what the process will be and how do you ensure. And it will probably fall to each state to determine how they would do a mail vote as opposed to voting in person. Mm-hmm.
Do we have another call that would like to engage the ambassador before she has to leave us? Good morning and welcome to our caller.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
I applied online for a visa and I just heard the ambassador said all visas are suspended. And I went ahead and paid because I applied online since February. And I have an appointment in November to go for to see if I get a visa. But you have to pay ahead of time. Am I going to be reimbursed seeing that she said they suspended all visas?
If you have an appointment, I mean, we obviously, payment is good for 1 year. If you would like your money back, I would need to figure out what that process is. But the payment is good for 1 year. When we go back to opening up and issuing visas, we will, in fact, call you in for an interview. Or if you, you have an American visa already?
Yeah, it just expired on the 22nd of this month.
Okay, so you would be a mail-in. You would mail your passport in when we open up the visas again.
So I wouldn't need...
You don't have to come in. So there would be an announcement that we are taking passports in the mail, and we would process your visa.
Okay.
The payment per year.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your question as well. Madam Ambassador, I'd like to thank you for joining us this morning on Down to Brass Tacks for a little over the half an hour you agreed to. But I want to thank you for your contribution. Before you leave us, anything you would like to say to Barbados and the Eastern Caribbean, the countries you serve?
Yes, I would. One of the things is, first of all, I miss being able to see people. I miss being able to travel to the other six beautiful islands. If I have to be quarantined quarantined on an island, I couldn't think of a better place than Barbados to be. But I would like to say that the embassy is now accepting applications for its Women in Politics Leadership Institute. The program will run from July 29th through August 26th. It's a five-week online course. It will gather 25 aspiring female leaders from Barbados and the Eastern Caribbean. The purpose will be to gain knowledge on the importance of identity, diversity, inclusion in politics, building a brand, building support, and community activism. We are accepting applications until July 3rd. You can apply. There's all sorts of information on our website you apply through our website. All the information is there. Please take a look. It's Bridgetown. It's bb.embassy.gov, our website. So please, young women who are interested, please apply. We've done programs in the Caribbean before. They've been very successful, and we'd very much like to have an active group of young women, interested female, aspiring female leaders to participate. And I would love to thank you for the opportunity to participate in this call this morning. It's been my pleasure to be here.
Pleasure having you as well, ma'am. And I hope that the period of isolation is, well, not too much longer, and that you remain in contact with both the citizens of the U.S. who reside here and in the Eastern Caribbean, and give them whatever assistance you and the members of your team can. Certainly was a pleasure having you, ma'am. 434-1790-266-4862, brasstax@starcomnetwork.net, the ways you reach us. Good morning. Hello?
Hi. Hello. Good morning.
Hi.
I just wanted to call in because the ambassador said something that was not correct. She mentioned that the police officers who killed Breonna Taylor have been disciplined, and that is not the case. Only one has been fired, and that was over 100 days after the incident. He was just fired this week. The rest of the officers are still on the job. They're not in the streets, but they're still on the job. And then furthermore, about the police system in the United States, I'm African-American. I live in the Washington, D.C. area. The police system in this country is based off the slave catcher patrol system. So it's inherently racist by nature. So I don't understand how she could say something like that and clearly not know the history of what police forces in this country have been for African-Americans here. The county that I live in is less than 10% Black, but the jail population is 70%. So obviously there are disparities there, and clearly that was misinformation. And then furthermore, to the Black Lives Matter movement, I wrote in last week, but I was so passionate about this, I had to call in. Black Lives Matter is a global movement. The people who have been on the ground for Black Lives Matter, we've been fighting for a long time, whether it's getting the school girls, raising awareness about the school girls in Nigeria, what's been going on in South Africa and throughout the continent and throughout the diaspora. Like, this is not a new thing. Just the name and the branding of the movement is new. But Black Lives Matter it's been a part of the groundwork for years. I don't understand why people think this is just a U.S. thing. This is just about George Floyd and all the recent killings of African Americans in this country, because it's not. It's been a part of American democracy and the fight for freedom and the recognition of Black folks in this country for a long time.
Ma'am, did you hear the beginning of the program?
I did not.
Okay, good. I started the program by saying, in 1963, there was civil unrest, racial unrest, demonstrations, nationwide outrage in the United States about the media coverage of police action in Birmingham, Alabama, attack dogs, fire hoses. I spoke about the March on Washington by Dr. Martin Luther King. I spoke about the demands of the marchers. I spoke about the Civil Rights Act. I spoke about affirmative action. And I asked the ambassador, in light of this going back to 1963, we're in 2020, and we have the issue with George Floyd. We have the issue with Breonna Taylor, Rashad Brooks, Ahmaud Arbery. We have various other instances of racial discrimination in the United States. I also asked about the fact that the Dreamers Act was being ended, that the executive orders restricting certain classes of visas and deportations. And is America saying they don't want immigrants or just certain types of immigrants? Because I was alive in 1963, and I know this goes back to the days of Black Power. That was the call then. It's been changed to Black Lives Matters today, but it was Power to the People back when I raised my fist and grew an Afro and wore dashiki and identified with things African. Yeah. So I'm very aware of how long the struggle has been. And my questions were based on the fact that after all this and the belief that the dream of Martin Luther King, where he quoted the book of Amos and said, let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream, that there is still the issue of racial inequality, not only in the United States, but I agree with you worldwide. And I said to the ambassador that while there may not have been one demonstration in the United States that raised the 250,000 of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, that worldwide, cumulative, including here in Barbados, the figure may very well be greater than 250,000. So I understand your point, and thanks for raising it with us, with the passion that you have. Brass Tacks, good morning. Hello? 4341-790. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello?
Yes, sir, good morning.
Is this Mr. Johnson?
It is.
Okay, good. Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Good morning, sir.
I want to raise two quick points, David, you. Mm-hmm. First, fruits, and the second one, crime.
Fruits
that you and I like to eat. Fruits. Mm-hmm. Now, I heard our Prime Minister, Ms. Mia Mabe, said we should eat plenty of fruits to help build up our immune system and so on with the coronavirus, which is true. She haven't said anything wrong. But, Mr. Johnson, I got a problem with these supermarkets. Why, I can ask you, why it is that these supermarkets have their fruits there in big numbers, big quantities? They're spoiled, they're soft up, they're touch up, they're on the verge of spoiling. And look, typical example, yesterday being in the supermarket, I wanted oranges. I dug to the bottom, I dug to the top, I dug out the side. I could not get no oranges. I leave them. All those oranges were in bad shape. Well, the banana section, I went to bananas, and I thought that I had the bananas covered. I took up 6 bananas, but one this morning, look, was spoiled. That one tricked me. Now, these things, Mr. Johnson, we really need to look into these things, man. Somebody need to come down to the markets and say, hey, look, listen. These consumptions that y'all have here, putting out for the human consumption, you can't do that. You got to come better than that. In England, for example, you can't do it. In England, the meat, poultry, and the vegetable poultry got to be to par.
You know why?
Huh?
You know why?
Well, because in England, they got inspectors come around, and these guys are drastic guys. If these guys recognize any sort of fruits that is not look pleasurable for human consumption, you could be closed down.
Two things. Standards, one. Two,
yes.
Checking, right. Three, the areas they come from, how quickly they get it while it's fresh and how fast it leaves the shelves. Unfortunately, here in the Caribbean, sometimes things are bought frozen, brought back out, and remain there for a long while. People now have options of buying fruit. They're purchased by the side of the road. They're purchased from other people. They don't use the supermarkets as regularly as they used to. And therefore, the supermarkets find produce on their hands for lengthy periods. Now, I agree with you
that
they could look at
it. Why is that, Mr. Johnson?
Because nobody buying it, and I just told you, being frozen for weeks.
No, I can be straight with you, because the prices is horrendous.
So wait, let me get to the fact that said if they realize, therefore, that they have produce that's been sitting there for a while and it's backed up and frozen, then you reduce the price in the hope that people will carry it away.
And that is what they're not doing.
Yeah, they're not doing it because people keep buying it at the price they're at. That's the point. You see, sir, at one point, and there's still some supermarkets where you could do it, because you said you went through the oranges, where you could go and select the oranges you want or the apples you want or whatever you want. These days, if you go into the supermarket, you see 7 oranges in a plastic bag or 8 oranges in a plastic bag, and it's wrapped up. And unless you inspect it, same thing with potatoes. Unless you inspect it, you may have 6 good ones and 2 not so good ones, or 2 that look like they're picked too young, and when you cut it, they're green and hard, because they won't get rid of what they have, and they just stash it together. People think it's convenient to pick up a plastic bag with 6, and they do so. And especially today, where if you go to supermarkets because of COVID and the challenges that it brought, you would hear the supermarket saying, shop with your eyes and not with your hands. So picking up and squeezing up the orange and putting it back down, you know, is kind of prohibited. So they hope that you just pick up a plastic bag and go along. But we're not selective in our shopping. And so we then complain that we've been taken advantage of.
So therefore, now we don't have no more shop inspectors that go to these establishments, that's a bad thing. But
yeah,
I remember years ago, well, not a big lot of years ago, a few years ago, when before David Thompson died, I remember David Thompson said on our national television, I remember his words very well, there will be the time he will be bringing out fruits out of Dominica. Dominica mm-hmm. has fruits down mm-hmm. there to throw away.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Mr. Donaldson, we come with these fruits?
They're there. They're falling down still.
Dominica?
They're still falling down, but how we can get from Dominica here? So how we can get from Dominica?
Huh?
How we can get from Dominica?
Well, I thought that some...
A supermarket we're going to get?
No. I thought that when he had passed away, someone would follow up on it,
you think so?
No one seems to follow up on it.
So, Liat converted some planes to carry cargo as opposed to people. And they had a big launch at the Hilton with all sorts of big screens, and they flew journalists from all over the Caribbean to talk about these great planes that they convert to make sure that produce is flown from one Caribbean island to the other swiftly and was going to be refrigerated so you could get there nice and fresh and you won't have to wait on any boat to take days. I don't know how often it's used. I have not heard of the many trips it's made and how it has made prices in Barbados any less. People in Barbados, there are mango trees in Barbados that the monkeys having fun with. So there are mangoes in Barbados. So the problem we face, and I say this all the time, and perhaps I'm the only person who keeps saying it, it is also a matter of taste. Once our people prefer to go to the supermarket and buy green and red apples imported from Florida, that when you taste it, it has absolutely no taste. You don't know if it's spread with anything. Certainly don't taste the apples that I used to have many, many moons ago when I was young. But maybe my taste buds have gotten worse with age.
You're right.
We got golden apples, and people don't eat golden apples for some strange reason. And golden apples are very nice. You can make juice with it. You can stew it.
They're going to eat the English apple, though. They're going to eat the English apple.
Which is my point. They taste like nothing.
Yeah.
And they pay for it, too. Yeah. 12 of them in a bag for $14.
Yeah. All right, let me make my last quick point so other callers could get in.
Sure, sir.
Listen, crime. You know, I told you I want to speak about two things. Crime mm-hmm. and the supermarkets,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Johnson,
mm-hmm.
this vision, you might hear me. I'm an advocate caller of crime on your program. I don't play around with crime. I will keep calling this program. I keep calling this program till I die with crime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, two crimes I want to talk about. Small boy crime and the white collar crime. I'll tell you why when I use the word small boy crime, what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Small boy crime, the average boy on the street gunning down one another and so on. And you know when I say white collar crime, what I mean. I got going further. Right. When we are really going to get serious about both crimes in Barbados, Mr. Johnson, because we only brush the small boy. We got some big boys out here that think they're untouchable. And I ain't seen a sign up St. Philip Mark, small boy only, big boy set free.
Hmm.
I ain't seen a sign up there, mark that. When we going to get serious about both crimes, then?
So we will get serious about both crimes when the small boy criminal, as you call him, and the big boy criminal or the white collar crime, when they can afford the same type of legal representation. I asked a practitioner what's the difference, and he tell me the cost. So if you have a guy who could pay $2.5 million to a high-priced lawyer, you get $2.5 million representation. If a man with teeth for a can of corned beef got a teeth for a can of corned beef, he can't pay nobody $5,000 to defend him. 4341-790, the Wednesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Let me, it would be remiss of me if I didn't extend the condolences to the family, friends, extended Guyanese community in Barbados on the death of Glenroy James, and also to the family, friends, colleagues of Christoph Griffith, one of our own, so to speak, a member of the nation team on their tragic passing. Segues to a comment on WhatsApp that says, who is responsible for crimes committed by people with mental health issues? The laws of Barbados recognizes something called diminished responsibility as it relates to people deemed to be insane. So wouldn't all accountability lie with the state for allowing such people to be on the streets and a danger to the general population? If I had a dog unleashed and unchained and it bit someone, who gets the blame? The dog? The blame resides with the owner. So in the case of mental health, the buck must stop with the state. Legal liability must lie with the state. More must be done to keep the streets free of persons whose mental health pose a threat to society, and that is the responsibility of the state, and in inverted commas, the writer says government. Also says, on the question of the countries targeted by the U.S. citizens over their use of Cuban nurses, that it's a hostile position based on an outdated Cold War ideology that threatens the sovereignty of countries like Barbados. The U.S. has proven to be a threat to the Caribbean that they claimed for many years the old USSR used to be. That is why, as we discussed, West Indians have a very long time believed that the fight for equality is up to the African Americans. It's our fight as well. A conquering empire unopposed does not stop conquering until it's defeated. We will be eventually rolled over by the imperialistic nation if we don't put up resistance to what they're doing. Now, the ambassador talked a lot about education, sir, and the question is, if we educate our people to believe that the USSR, Soviet Union, communism, that's the enemy, the United States, Britain, the United Nations, this countries of Europe are our friends, that they help us in time of need, that they come to our assistance when we have hurricanes and those things. That's what we're told. And that's what our people say when they call these programs. Don't say anything against the U.S. If you raise your voice, you get a WhatsApp that says you're anti-American too. And this is from someone who is of Caribbean heritage living in the United States. You're backward. This is above your head. So our people are told that these are your friends. And that is an education process. I was reading something online preparing for the exchange with the ambassador this morning. I saw a lady draped in a Confederate flag saying to some demonstrators, I will teach my grandchildren to hate you. That's an education process. So it's not that the people of the Caribbean think that the fight is for African Americans. They believe that the United States, the entity, is a friend. So that the voices raised there are discordant voices, they're making it difficult for the rest of us. That's the feeling.